The broadcast of the reading of the Richmond Times-Dispatch on the Virginia Voice is made possible due to the generous support of the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Welcome to the reading of the Monday, April 22nd, Richmond Times-Dispatch. I'm Alex Childress for the Virginia Voice. We'll have about 25 minutes of front page and local news, followed by about 25 minutes of news from the nation and world. After that, a half hour of editorials, columnists, and letters to the editor from the opinions pages, as well as other news as time allows. Our final half hour, we'll begin with the obituaries, and then whatever else we have time for. But before all that, the 3-day Richmond area forecast. Today, a high of 63 and an overnight low of 38, mostly sunny and warmer. Tomorrow, a high of 72 and an overnight low of 55, mostly sunny and warmer. Finally, on Wednesday, a high of 75 and an overnight low of 44, with a stray morning shower. Your readers for today are Tracy Lynch and Pete Legato.
I'm Pete Legato, and we'll begin this reading of the April 22nd Richmond Times-Dispatch on page A1. Henrico, student conduct at issue. School board plans updates to code. This is by Sean Jones of the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Henrico County school officials are readying updates to the student code of conduct that would lessen suspensions from sports and activities for possession of alcohol, tobacco, or drugs, while also providing an updated definition for self-defense after a school fight. Meanwhile, proposed code of conduct updates did not include any provision that would take students' cell phones during school, though some school board members showed a preference for it. Members asked about using phone pouches to lock phones away during the school day, similar to what has been done in other Richmond area school divisions. A final version of these proposed updates is scheduled to be approved at the June 6th school board meeting. They would go into effect for the 2024-25 school year. Staff said many of these updates were spurred by changes at the federal and state level, while others were done to better reflect the standards being used by other schools in the area. Under the proposed language, students would face less severe suspensions from extracurricular activities if they are found with alcohol, tobacco, or drugs while at school or at a school-sanctioned event. Also, the wording "school-sanctioned event" would replace off-school property in the code. Suspensions under this policy would only impact activities sanctioned by the Virginia High School League, which governs sports and other events such as debate and theater. Those suspensions would also be significantly shortened under the proposed changes. A first offense is dropped from a 30-day suspension to a 15-day suspension. Second offenses are reduced from a 1-year suspension to a 30-day suspension. Third offenses would no longer carry a career-long ban from high school sports and activities, instead resulting in a 60-day ban. Students would also have to pass a drug education course before being allowed to compete again. William Knoll Sr., director of the Disciplinary Review Hearing Office, said the mandated drug awareness changes give the student activities contract more teeth, given that finishing the course is no longer just an option. Madison Irving, Three Chop District School Board member, said, Changes to the student activities contract are remarkably welcomed. The previous one was overly punitive, and though not often enforced, I would say, even having it on the books, I think that was something that wasn't actually solving any problems. Superintendent Amy Cashwell clarified that this policy is separate from the school's overall disciplinary process. For instance, students who face criminal charges outside of school, she said, could have their attendance impacted, which would affect their participation in sports and activities. Situations when students can invoke self-defense after an in-school fight or altercation could also be changed under the proposed policy. To claim self-defense, a person would have to show that they were, quote, without fault in provoking or bringing on the fight or incident, or to have reasonably feared under the circumstances that there was an imminent risk of harm, and to have used no more force than was reasonably necessary to prevent the threat. Noel said, "In discipline hearings, I often hear parents or guardians say my child was simply defending themselves when their actions did not meet the model guidance definition of self-defense." An additional line clarifies that self-defense would not be a valid protection for anyone possessing a weapon. Regarding cell phone use, the current policy requires that phones be out of visible sight, silenced, or in airplane mode during class time at the high school level. At the middle school and elementary level, students are allowed to use phones with permission for instructional purposes, when they are released from class, and at after-school events. Educators in Henrico and across the nation have said that cell phone use has become rampant at all levels and that it has become a major disruption during class time, regardless of policy. Irving asked about the possibility of storing phones during the school day. He said, "I would love us to explore implementation that is even across buildings to ensure that kids don't even have the temptation to want to be on phones because they can be there engaging with their classmates." Irving said districts that have taken phones away have seen a reduction in fights, class skipping, drug deals in bathrooms, and other safety concerns. "I just think it would be very positive for our communities and our schools," he said. Brooklyn District Member Christy Kinsella said she favored a solution that does not take phones away from students during the day. "We've had the policy, but it's just to the degree that folks feel it's being enforced," Kinsella said. "I would like, instead of being a phone police, to say that self-regulation is a life skill." School Board Chair Alicia Atkins said she would be in favor of a complete ban for elementary school students having their cell phones during the day. "That age group having a cell phone, to me, is unacceptable," Atkins said. "A kindergartner in a class with a cell phone doesn't make sense." The Integrity and Honesty section of the code is rewritten to include the use of generative AI as a form of plagiarism, should students attempt to pass off work done by artificial intelligence as their own. Also, updates delete a portion of the dress code stating that students are restricted from wearing cut-off jeans, cut-off sweatpants, or torn, ripped, or slashed clothing. The board clarified that the dress code is related to modern fashion trends. Clothing would still be prohibited from showing undergarments or revealing the midriff. And that was an article from Sean Jones of the Richmond Times-Dispatch on page A1, Student Conduct at Issue.
Thanks, Pete. Our next article is also from page A1 of the Times-Dispatch. It's entitled Earth Day: What Virginia is Doing on the Warming Front. This article is written by Sean Sublette of the Time-Dispatch. Times Dispatch. After 9 consecutive winters warmer than normal, Virginia is now having one of its 10 warmest starts to a calendar year on record. As the climate continues to warm in the decades to come, Virginia can expect several additional impacts, from the mountains to the coast. At the most basic level, heat waves will occur more often and be more intense. Not every summer day will be over 100 degrees, but more days will be hotter than in the past. The change is already underway and accelerating. Using Richmond as reference over the entire 20th century, the city averaged 39 days a year at or above 90 degrees. So far in the 21st century, the average has climbed to 48. Virginia's infamous humidity is also trending upward in the summer, as 8 of the last 9 summers have been more humid than average. Combining the two makes it increasingly difficult for the body to cool itself, as higher humidity slows the rate of evaporation off the skin, heightening risk of heat-related illnesses like heat stroke. For outdoor workers, this is a particular concern, whether doing outdoor construction in Richmond and Roanoke or working the soybean fields in Pennsylvania and Southampton counties. On the other side of the calendar, winter does not go away, but what we think of as winter is getting shorter. On average, during the 20th century, Richmond had 53 winter nights with a hard freeze, meaning 28 degrees or colder. Since 2001, the average has dropped to 44. Those warmer winters may seem nice, but they also mean more mosquitoes and ticks are able to survive over the winter. Allergy season is also extended, as tree pollen shows up earlier in the spring and ragweed lingers later into the fall. Intense rain is also more likely, as a warmer and more humid environment means more evaporation into the atmosphere. Further, the relationship is not linear, as the potential amount of moisture in the air rises dramatically with temperature. This leads to a higher risk of flash flooding of streams and creeks, which can wash out rural roads, and of urban and suburban flooding, where older infrastructure is not in place to handle excessively heavy rain. Closer to the coast, whether it is the rural areas near the Chesapeake Bay or the urbanized Hampton Roads, coastal flooding is becoming more frequent. Sea level has risen about 1 to 2 feet over the last century as waters have warmed and expanded. Combined with a slowly sinking ground, sea level rise in Virginia is surpassed only by Louisiana, where extractive industry is making its problems substantially worse. Even in the absence of storms, the higher base sea level means that flooding from occasional high tides is more frequent. Also known as sunny day flooding, it corrodes coastal infrastructure due to the repeated exposure to salt water. With Naval Station Norfolk being the largest naval complex in the world, sea level rise highlights the climate change costs to the country's military infrastructure. Returning to the farms on the Northern Neck and Middle Peninsula, the rising bays and tidal rivers push the underground water table higher, potentially causing older septic systems to fail. The salt line also rises with the water table, making farmland less productive. While Virginia does not have the infamous droughts of the western United States, any droughts in the warming climate can develop more quickly, as warmer air dries out soils more rapidly. Earlier this year, despite a lack of long-term drought, the dry surface vegetation in and around the Shenandoah Valley contributed to wildfire development in the strong March winds. Numerous lines of physical evidence indicate the burning of fossil fuels for energy is the root cause of the warming, but there are positive signs if you look closely. As prices have dropped, renewable energy has begun to scale upward in Virginia. Solar energy is the least expensive form of energy, and statewide capacity has increased from practically zero 10 years ago to more than 4,000 megawatts today, roughly enough to power several hundred thousand homes. Wind power is not as reliable in Virginia as in the gusty Great Plains, but offshore the wind is more consistent. Even though the initial cost is formidable, offshore wind is coming. This summer, Dominion Energy will begin installing the foundations for 176 wind turbines east of Virginia Beach, well out of sight of beachgoers. The installations will take place only in the summer to lessen the impact to the North Atlantic right whale migration. And the utility is using a technology called bubble curtains to dampen the sound energy from the process. No single technology will slow the impact of the warming climate, but in the last few years, some of the goals to limit warming are beginning to be within reach. More work needs to be done, but there is certainly room for optimism this Earth Day. That article, again, was entitled What Virginia is Doing on the Warming Front, written by Sean Sublette of the Times-Dispatch. Pete?
Sean Sublette also has another piece related to climate change on page A4. How Northern and Southern Virginia Cooperate on Climate Initiatives. Coming off the warmest winter on record nationally and the ninth warmest on record in Virginia, long-term planning for the impacts of the warming climate at the local level are becoming more important. Fair or not, there is often unease on the topic between Northern Virginia and Southern Virginia. But earlier this year, a team from George Mason University in Fairfax began working with community leaders and local officials from Southside Virginia through the university's Local Climate Action Planning Initiative. Many areas away from the state's larger communities do not have the resources to develop or execute an environmental plan that addresses long-term implications of the warming climate on everyday things: building codes, wastewater, transportation, education, pollution, and energy. The GMU team of students and faculty met with several Southside Virginia communities earlier this year, including Danville, Martinsville, and Henry County, to develop an energy action plan to save money, reduce pollution, and bring jobs. Led by Paul Bubush, research professor in the Schar School of Policy and Government at GMU, the team includes Skyler George Lynch, a native of Roanoke County. Growing up in Cave Spring, she developed a passion for understanding the connections between the warming climate and energy policy. As she is finishing up her undergraduate studies, Lynch wants to be sure the connections between science and local government remain strong. It is really important to have the mesh between the science side and the government side because there seems to be a disconnect, she said. Lynch, who was on the team working with Danville, emphasized the importance of listening to what the community needed. It was really nice to hear all of the viewpoints, she said. We really wanted feedback to be sure we can implement the best plan for Danville because it needs to work for them, not Roanoke or Fairfax. Renee Burton, Danville planning director, was among those involved. In an email, she said, GMU has provided the city of Danville a full-service program at no cost. The program includes modeling of our energy profile while organizing and leading a task force through the development of an energy action plan. In addition to Burton, the Danville group included city staff, members of the nonprofit Dan River Basin Association, educators from Averett University and Danville Community College, and the Reverend Larry Campbell from Danville City Council. As the GMU advisor, Bubosh was happy to put the grant into action. He said, as a university, we value the opportunity to expand education from the classroom to the community and to translate science, policy, and engineering to its most practical and needed application to the vulnerable and marginalized communities of Virginia. These development plants are investigative in nature, meaning they empower initial research and feasibility studies to be done before any physical actions are taken. Burton continues, with an energy action plan in place, the city of Danville can access state and federal funds available to lower our energy costs and increase our resilience. Among the proposals, the teams suggest investigating the benefits of migrating Danville's public fleet vehicles from gasoline to electric, as the older vehicles are scheduled to be retired, being certain that the necessary charging infrastructure was in place to support them. Similarly, the city could take stock of its public buildings to determine which ones were suitable to be powered by rooftop or community solar panels. The teams also emphasized the need for job training via the region's community colleges, keeping people in the area and improving the quality of life in Southside, Virginia. Smiling, Lynch also emphasizes the health aspects of the plan. She said, "Yes, decrease their emissions, air pollution, water pollution, all that stuff no one wants around." Currently undergoing final stages of review, the plan is scheduled for public review in May, before potentially being adopted. And that article was from page A4 by Sean Sublett of the Richmond Times-Dispatch, "How Northern and Southern Virginia Cooperate on Climate Initiatives."
Thanks, Pete. Our next article is located on page A2 and is entitled, "Canine Celebrity Promotes Literacy in Southside, Virginia," by Charles Wilborn of the Danville Register and Bee. Even though Jerry Wallace is the president of Danville Community College, his dog, a 7-year-old named Ace, tends to get more attention from the community. That's because Ace is a canine celebrity around Southern Virginia. The small, well-behaved Yorkie Poo is the star of Ace the Mighty Conquers Night School, a book geared towards 2nd through 4th graders. Written by Wallace and Faith O'Neill, the Director of Public Relations and Marketing at DCC, the book serves as a bridge to reach the younger generation about the Dan River region. A few years ago, when the Danville City Council announced that education was the number one priority in the city, O'Neill knew that the college had to find a way to be in sync with that mission. You want to be able to share those stories, but at the same time, it's a priority to reach out to high school students and sometimes the late-stage middle school students, O'Neill explained to the Register and Bee recently, noting that the elementary sector often gets left out. She said, "The project is great in terms of literacy and in terms of sharing things with the K-12 space, which we haven't done as much of as we would like. It also helped to humanize Wallace as the new leader of the community college. We've had a lot of turnover here, a lot of volatility in the years prior," O'Neill openly admitted, "and then there was COVID. When he arrived on campus in 2022, and especially when talking with staff members, Wallace often brought up his dogs. And it's really worked out beautifully because people recognize him," she said of Ace. "Even if they don't recognize Dr. Wallace in his weekend clothes, they recognize Ace." She says there's data that shows the reading level in the city is that of an 8th grader. "And that's unfortunate for a lot of reasons," O'Neill said, detailing how this is a project for the community instead of one that's designed to boost enrollment numbers. Wallace, O'Neill, and, of course, Ace, have ventured out to 22 elementary schools, 2 libraries, and 1 Head Start program. The book tour sessions encompass about 30 minutes. "He usually wears his knight's suit," Wallace said of Ace, donning the costume of the DCC mascot, "and that's probably his favorite part. When the suit goes on, Ace knows it's time for the show. He turns into the knight, complete with a celebrity attitude," Wallace said. Wallace starts by asking the students if they know about DCC. Then he gives facts about Ace, the dog. Those facts come up later as trivia questions where children can win prizes. Wallace always highlights 3 things. He calls them ACE's rules to remember for the students. Reading is fun, try your best to never give up, and always be kind. Those are also the recurring themes of the book. After O'Neill reads the book and asks trivia questions, teachers are put on the spot to select a student who exemplifies those 3 things for yet another prize. Near the end, students get to pet ACE, who is always sitting on Wallace's lap. Wallace explained, "When it's his time to get up or walk around or let them pet him, he gets right into character." It all wraps up when students are provided a page from the book as a coloring contest. We do come back and bring the class pizza, O'Neill said, after departments from DCC vote on the coloring contest winner. So far, they've given away about 1,000 books in the visits to the three localities in the community college's service area. Wallace calls the reactions from schools excellent. He said that they built momentum after launching the book tour in Pennsylvania County. The DCC president, Wallace, holding Ace in his lap, told the registrant B during an interview on campus, "I really appreciate Pennsylvania County stepping up and letting us in first." Last week, Ace visited Roanoke for a Virginia Community College System conference, where Wallace and O'Neill presented the same program they do for the kids. "It's kind of made its way up the chain and around the state," O'Neill said. "I will say the system office is probably some of our biggest fans," Wallace quickly chimed in. The message. O'Neill said they were very intentional with the message of the book. "We are not selling community college to elementary school students," she explained. Instead, trying to push to students, they are college material. You can overcome barriers. You can persist. You can have grit. You can have determination," she explained. Wallace had told her a statistic. Students generally decide by sixth grade if they are material for college based on what they hear from family and teachers. "It's a pretty pivotal moment in a kid's life," she said. That was kind of our goal, to reach out to all of those elementary school students and say, "Hey, you definitely are college material," she continued. "And you can do this, and it doesn't matter where you came from." They wanted to drive home the perspective that even if someone is small or disadvantaged, they can still be determined and, quote, do great things. Just like Ace. In the book, his sisters and friends make fun of him. Starting there, just making his journey go from that hero to something we wanted to drive home for elementary students, O'Neill said. The book also contains a familiar face from DCC's past, Carlisle Ramsey, who led the college for 2 decades. About Ace. Ace came into Wallace's life when he was moving to West Virginia from Michigan. He was living alone at the time and didn't have a dog, so he found Ace. His wife had a miniature schnauzer, Ace's sister, who's in the book now. "He's aggressive with his sister. That's basically his biggest toy," Wallace said. "However, Ace is the smaller of the siblings, so it's a more of a playful interaction." Being a social media star, Ace has his own Instagram page, at DCCPrezPup, Prez with a Z. He's already popular with the community and campus. "He enjoys the attention," Wallace said of Ace, who has a bed in the president's office. "He doesn't live here or work here, he just comes for his thing. But whenever there's a request, Ace generally finds his way. He comes to some community things, he comes to things on campus. O'Neill has written speeches for Ace." Of course, Wallace ends up reading the words. "We couldn't have a better dog personality," O'Neill said of Ace's nonchalant mannerism. "He is just so chill. However, the extra attention does tucker him out." On the ride home from Pennsylvania County in Halifax, he's sleeping, Wallace explained, as Ace dozed off for a few minutes during the interview. Shining moments and what's happening next? Wallace realized the impact Ace had on the community when a national night out event was hosted in October. A young child rushed up to Ace. "She ran up to me, but not me. She ran up because she saw Ace," the president explained. The child was in one of the school stops for the book tour. The excited youngster asked Wallace if she could bring her sister over to meet the now famous dog. "That's when I realized it was full circle and the students are actually remembering him," he said. "There's already chatter on what's going to happen next, speculating that another book could be on the horizon. I think there's been some discussion on whether we want to continue in this vein and come up with some kind of sequel or prequel," O'Neill said. "I don't know what we're going to come up with just yet." The book tour isn't over, and O'Neill said that any organization that would like to meet Ace can reach out to her at faith.o'neill@danville.edu. That's faith.o'neill, spelled O-N-E-I-L, @danville.edu.